Welcome to That 80s Show, the show that brings you the Hoff to Susanna Hoffs and everything in between, although we have none of those today. How are you, Dori? Dori your name?
Yes, it's Dori. Carla, right?
That's, yes, last
we
I checked.
We have been Bueller for 2 weeks.
I mean,
like, 2 weeks Bueller.
You know what I mean?
Like, I know.
Things get in the way. Dori's writing matric. So she's got to focus. She's got to focus on that. But we're back. We're back in the 1980s. So many stories I've been saving for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Stories change. People die.
Let's do all of them in 1 minute.
Oh.
Okay, 2 minutes.
I deleted them all. Coming up today, we're talking TV shows. I've got two 80s truths and a lie. Movie recommendations, but I'm going to start off with something. So many 80s related people dying lately, Dori.
I know.
We seem to start every show with that lately.
Well, it's that era now. That is it.
You know, my wife was saying, and I think this might be something in general for anybody like of our age, our generation, yes, going, oh, the past 2 years has been so terrible. People just aren't making 60 anymore, whatever. You know, people we know passing away or you know, people like closely related to us. And I'm going, it's not, I don't think they're dying. You know, I said, remember, people before.
Yeah.
In their 50s and 60s, passing away, having a heart attack, shit like that. Those are your parents' friends.
Yep.
Now they're your friends. So I don't think there's more or less people having. I think it's just they're getting closer to us.
We are now of that age, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, no, that's like, as we've seen, you know, the 31st of December does not mean the ending of anything because it did not mean the end of the 80s.
No.
31 December didn't because we're just dragging it along. So one of the dies. No, rest in peace. Diane Keaton.
Yeah.
Huge star from the 80s, 70s, 80s, 60s. She was huge. Huge in
for
a lot of things.
For many decades, actually.
Many decades. And so many things pop up about her. And, you know, talk about the movies. She was married to Al Pacino. Or she had a relationship with Al Pacino. I don't know that.
I don't know.
Do you know she directed music videos?
I did not.
She directed films. She directed music videos. Two music videos in particular. I know we're going to end the show for two 80s truths and a lie, but if I told you this story, you would not be able to identify it. Did you know that Diane Keaton directed Belinda Carlisle videos?
Nope.
Before she started directing films. So she decides she wants to get into directing.
Right.
Gets approached. Belinda Carlisle was going on, going solo. And they get Diane Keaton to direct. I mean, we're talking.
Which videos?
Heaven is a Place on Earth and I Get Weak.
Oh my goodness.
Two massive hits. Singles. Right?
I'm trying to think of the videos.
Oh, I'll describe the videos to you. So,
you've watched them multiple times, I'm sure.
Oh, you know, we do love Belinda Carlisle. Mm-hmm. We do love her. So Heaven is a Place on Earth, we'll post this up, that 80 Show essay on Facebook. It features children wearing black masks and capes while holding illuminated plastic globes. And Belinda Carlisle is looking very lovely in a strapless dress. That song reached number one. And this is the time of MTV, so it would have been on high rotation.
Yeah.
And then I Get Weak. A little bit more moody, black and white. Just kind of like soft lighting.
I don't remember that one.
No, you
one.
Won't.
Vaguely remember the other one, but that one not at all.
I'll post them both up. Again, another another video that got high rotation on MTV. The now no longer with us MTV.
Yes, another thing from the 80s that has died.
We'll talk more about MTV a little bit later because that's the theme of two 80s truths and a lie.
Oh,
MTV edition.
Okay.
The thing about MTV, MTV's died. Like we didn't get MTV in South Africa in the 80s, right?
No.
We knew about MTV because it was in every single TV show. But like,
and it was in that Dire Straits song.
Oh, yeah, right. And then I think the first time I saw MTV was in 1990. I was like 10 years old, went to Italy and they have MTV. I watch it, I go, okay, yeah, this is fucking cool. But by the time MTV comes out here in the 90s, we kind of got it like mid-90s here.
Wasn't it with DSTV?
It was, yes.
Yeah.
So they started carrying it. And already then, it wasn't just music videos. It was
all those silly shows.
A lot of shows. Well, Beavis and Butthead was on there. So that may be a silly show for you. For me, it was fucking fantastic.
Silly and good.
And it was just like already MTV was starting to become this like half and half thing.
Mm.
So, and then next thing you know, it's just reality shows. They had like their toned down version of Girls Gone Wild. And they had like Cindy Crawford was hosting shows, which again, silly show I loved. So I don't have that. Even we don't have that experience of
MTV in the
classic
80s.
MTV by first person.
Yeah.
We know it by reference.
Yeah.
Right? Because of how much we love the 80s. So, yeah, I mean, it just became a nothing. It's just kind of like time's moved on. Music videos
on demand now, man.
Killed the music star. Like, I was reading a lot of articles about it. They say it's you just don't release, you know, if you do a music video, you're more likely to release it in shorts on TikTok. Because that's how people are consuming. Even, yeah, you drop it on YouTube, but like, you know, now it's TikTok stuff. Like just,
I mean, I have a teenager, as do you.
Yeah.
And YouTube music is the thing in our house.
Mm.
And I will, if there's a song I like, I'll go look for the music video on YouTube. And then I'll say to my kid, oh my God, have you seen the video for this? And they look at me and they go, nah, they're completely disinterested.
Yeah.
Completely disinterested
It's just not the same thing.
This generation, it's not the music video generation.
Damn you, children. I was watching a documentary about yacht rock. I love yacht rock.
I know.
I love it. And it's quite funny because like these guys were making really good, great crossover music. And, you know, we were talking Michael McDonald, we're talking Kenny Loggins.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like, then MTV comes along. And they're like, we're so fucked because we don't have a look.
Yeah.
Like we're just really boring, weird. Look, Christopher Cross, fantastic musician, weird looking dude.
Is that why Kenny Loggins put all his songs into movies?
Right. That's the path he went down.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we were so fucked because we were on high rotation. The top five songs were, it wasn't called Yacht Rock then. It only got like nicknamed Yacht Rock years later.
Wasn't it called Soft Rock?
Yeah, it was like hybrid, something was like, jazz fusion, it was a little mix of everything.
Middle of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And only got christened Yacht Rock many years later. And they were just like, oh my God, like we don't look like, because music videos then were just people performing their song.
Mm.
And they're like, MTV's like, we don't want that shit.
Miming to their song.
Miming to their song. MTV's like, we don't want that shit. Like get the shit out of here. So it killed Yacht Rock. Two huge stars of MTV. They came around at the perfect time, Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie.
Yeah.
The music video of Dancing on the Ceiling. Lionel Richie doing a lot of stuff on a lot of podcasts, doing a lot of interviews, revealing stuff about Michael Jackson and reveals his nickname. That a lot of people will call him Michael Jackson. This may not surprise you. Michael Jackson was very creatively nicknamed Smelly.
Why?
Because he was smelly.
Why was he smelly?
It's quite gross, actually.
Okay.
So Lionel Richie, one of the good guys, he says that it was quite known that he would work with, you know, they'd work with Mark Jackson. Everyone called him smelly because, and Michael Jackson would laugh at it because he got so caught up in the studio and working and he just wouldn't change clothes for days on end.
Ew.
And they'd come to studio and they're like, I'm pretty sure he wore that yesterday. And 2 days later, they say, fuck, I'm pretty sure he wore that on Monday. And it's just like, yuck.
Mean he didn't shower either.
That's fucking disgusting. Like, I got to tell you, it doesn't surprise me that Michael Jackson would stink. So he then goes on to say that his poor hygiene was due in part to extreme level of fame in that often he was on the road touring. He just couldn't go by clothes. This sounds like a bullshit story.
Absolutely.
He was on tour performing in the elaborate costumes made for him by a stylist, or he's in his pajama bottoms and slippers in the studio, or he was in his going out attire, or he is at home in something loose and comfortable. So he'd practice his moves and play with his menagerie of pets. Pets, he says. But he says, when it was just the two of them together, he says, Jackson put on no airs, graces, or deodorant. Whenever Michael came to visit me, he was wearing whatever, jeans and a t-shirt, and the jeans were either falling off him, too short to even be jeans, and well, smelly. And he says, Michael Jackson, Michael, why don't you go get new jeans? He's like, I can't just walk into a store and get jeans.
Fair. But you got people. Your staff. Exactly. I mean, we're talking about he was already pretty damn famous by the stage, right?
Oh, ridiculous. I mean, Michael Jackson's never not been famous.
You have assistants who can take your clothes for dry cleaning, who can do laundry for you.
Who can go buy you new clothes.
Because you have money. No. I don't accept any
And
of
even
that.
If you're dancing all that, people can bathe you. Are you so busy? Like, I can imagine Michael Jackson just like in the middle of the day, jump on, just wants to dance.
So there was never bath time with the kids?
Okay, moving on to movie recommendations of the week. Like to delve into the movies. Okay, let's move on to a list I found, Dory. I disagree with this list. It was the best TV show released in every year of the 80s.
Ooh.
Okay.
Okay.
Each one, I'm going to give you what the list said is from Screen Rant, and I'm going to give you an alternative.
Okay.
Hugely skewing.
Right.
Hugely skewing. Right. So in this list, it says 1980, the best TV show released in 1980, a British show called Hammer House of Horror. Now, I don't know what this is based on. I don't know if it's on category. I don't know if this is just personal opinion of this writer. Yeah. Hammer House of Horror. Never heard of it?
Never heard of it.
Magnum PI was also released in 1980.
OMG.
Exactly. Right. 1981. Okay. Hill Street Blues.
Okay.
Dynasty was also released in 1981.
Well, I watched Dynasty. I did not watch Hill Street Blues.
Right. So Dory's going with Dynasty. 1982, big year. This writer goes with Cheers, but we also have Knight Rider, Fame, and Family Ties.
Okay.
I mean,
80s me. Nothing beats Knight Rider. Nothing.
That's okay. It. But now you?
I'm kind of torn because in retrospect, Cheers was brilliant.
And Cheers is super good.
Super good.
Super good, but Knight Rider.
Ties, I mean, MJ. MJF.
I know. I'm still going Knight Rider.
What was the other one?
Fame. Again, good
Loved
year.
It.
Good year.
Loved
19-
Fame.
Good year.
The others are better.
Good year. In 1983, again, this is super revisionist. I can tell this person who wrote this is not from the 80s.
Mm.
Bob Ross, The Joy of Painting.
Oh, Lord.
Now, again, that's also something that's become a bit bigger later. You cannot compete when A-Team comes out in the same year.
Oh, no ways.
Right?
No ways.
Absolute total opposite tone and vibe of TV shows. 1984, they went with Night Court.
Okay.
Okay. Also in that year, Miami Vice.
Well, you say no more. Literally say no
okay.
more.
Okay. If I had to say more, I'd say The Cosby Show and Murder, She Wrote.
No.
Okay.
Miami Vice, hands down.
Definitely not Night Court. 85, Golden Girls.
Okay.
But MacGyver.
Oh,
also.
MacGyver wins.
So I'm saying they went in 1986 with Pee Wee's Playhouse. I didn't get that.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely not getting it when pitched up against... You've spoken about Designing Woman, came out in 1986. Elf.
Okay.
But I think we can both agree on Perfect Strangers.
Oh, not even a competition.
Have you seen those pictures lately? I'll pop these up on that 80 Show SF Facebook page. Bronson Pinchot jacked.
No.
He has gotten so fucking jacked. It's ridiculous.
Has he been doing the Dance of Joy too much?
It is. Well, he's been doing it on his hands because he is fucking ripped.
Okay.
1987, they went with Star Trek, but Married with Children came out in that year.
Oh, that's a tough one for me. I'm not as big a Married with Children fan as you are.
Are you a big Star Trek fan?
I was in the 80s. Okay. I'm not anymore, but I did love it as a kid.
Okay, so we'll give that one.
Yeah.
Let's go with that one.
Yeah.
1988, a poor, poor year. Mystery Science Theater made their list.
I love Mystery Science Theater.
And then alternative is The Wonder Years.
Oh, tough one. But I love Mystery Science Theater.
Okay, so we'll give
to
that
this
one.
Day, I love Mystery Science.
We'll give that one, and finally to round out 1989. Right, I'll tell you. I'll end with what they went with. But also coming out in 1989 was Quantum Leap.
Ooh.
Also in 1989 was The Simpsons. They went with Seinfeld.
And remember, we've discussed this. Seinfeld so didn't cusp. Actually come out in 89.
So cusp.
Like the pilot that failed came out in 89.
Four feelings of the 80s. It's got to be Quantum Leap.
Absolutely.
Because Seinfeld Absolutely. And Simpsons are so 90s.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
So it has to be Quantum Leap. All right. That's some TV shows. We're not talking TV shows in your recommendation, are we? We're doing a movie.
I've got a movie.
Dory, tell us what we are watching on your recommendation.
I cannot remember how I discovered this movie. I went down some rabbit hole and ended up with this movie, and wow is what I'm going to say. Not necessarily in a good way.
Okay. My
this
favorite.
This movie, you can imagine if you watch this movie that J.K. Rowling watched this movie and went, huh, I've got an idea. In fact, I'm not going to mention the movie yet, although you've probably never heard of it. While J.K. Rowling hasn't explicitly stated that this movie was an influence, there are strong parallels between the stories, and it is plausible it was a subconscious influence. Both stories feature an orphaned or neglected boy who is called away to a magical land through a special letter, finds a new family, learns he has a special destiny, and has to defeat an evil villain with the aid of a magical object. In fact, my movie literally has an invisibility cloak.
Oh my God.
Okay. My movie is also the first movie that Christian Bale ever starred in. We always thought it was Empire of the Sun.
Oh,
it is not.
I've heard about this movie.
This movie is called Mio in the Land of Faraway.
Yes, I've heard about this movie. No fucking idea about it, but
it
I have heard about it.
The Scandinavian version of Neverending Story meets Harry Potter, meets Lord of the Rings, meets pick one in
meets
that.
Meets copyright infringement.
Meets anything in that genre. Yes. Boy goes to magical place on a journey, has to defeat a villain.
Yes.
Boy is in real life very miserable in this case it's an adopted aunt and uncle. Well, actually, he called him aunt and uncle, but they were just people who adopted him, and they treated him terribly, and he was absolutely miserable. And
scar on his forehead.
Nope.
No,
but
spot.
His mother had died, and his father. They everyone said he didn't know who his father was, and everyone said his father was terrible and was not worth looking for. Of course, when he gets to the magic faraway land, there's his father is the king, and his father is a wonderful person.
Mm.
I am waiting the whole time for this movie for him to wake up from this dream.
Okay.
No, that does not happen. This is literally, he goes there and he lives there. That's it. It's based on a book by a Swedish author, apparently quite famous. Never heard of her, Astrid something. Anyway, point is, there's also a white horse in this movie that, spoiler alert, does not die. And I'm watching it and I'm thinking, if this horse dies, then I'm out.
Yeah.
The horse does not die. But at one point, it looks like the horse might die.
Oh, keeps walking past quicksand.
No, there's no quicksand.
Keeps walking perilously close to quicksand.
There's no quicksand in this movie, Matt, funnily enough. No quicksand in this movie. It's, the acting is relatively terrible.
Oh, good.
Except for Christopher Lee, who plays the villain. He's fantastic.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, so he's great.
Dari, what a bizarre movie. It's a Swedish movie.
Yes.
A joint collaboration between Sweden, Norway, and the Soviet Union.
Oh, yes.
What the fuck? Propaganda is going on here.
I'm going to read you a quote from Christopher Lee about his experience filming it, because it's too funny, actually. I mean, and he wasn't even in it that much, so I'm kind of surprised. They actually filmed it in different locations, obviously. I mean, the beautiful countryside parts were clearly Sweden. And then the parts with Christopher Lee are in this, like, castle. And obviously that was shot in Moscow. No idea why. So it says, yeah, in 1997, Christopher Lee recalled various difficulties while shooting the film in Moscow during 1986. This is a quote from him. As a work environment, it was a horror story. For us, the faraway land was the Soviet Union, where the food was uneatable, the sanitation unspeakable, the political people ubiquitous. It was irritating work. Nothing ever happened before lunch, and since it took forever to light a scene, not much after it. These were the standard frustrations of Russian filmmaking at that time. So he does not have a positive recollection of the movie, even though he is probably the best part of it, honestly. And he's only in it maybe the last 15, 20 minutes. That's it. Because the journey is to go vanquish the villain. So it happens at the very end.
Who plays the father?
Timothy Bottoms.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The name's familiar. He's vaguely familiar. I don't know.
Bottoms.
Christian Bale is a child, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
His acting is not great, and somehow I think he must have been filming Empire of the Sun around the same time, because they both came out that year. So, no idea what happened there.
Right.
And yet, there's some really funny, like, bizarre things, which I can only say is because it's Scandinavian, maybe. The way he gets to the land. I'll share the clip. I will share a clip on our Facebook page of how he gets to this land of faraway. So essentially it's a children's story, quite a children's movie. So it's all British cast, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's filmed in these locations, it almost has that far away fantasy feel from the start anyway.
Yeah.
Like it's not your usual, you know, UK or USA.
I mean, in the 80s, what did we know about Norway other than Aha? You know?
Honestly.
That's, you know.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I'm glad I've watched it.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know. Yeah, it was different to what I expected. But look, I would not recommend it necessarily for grown-ups.
It's a curiosity.
It's almost like a grim fairy tale. It's okay. Quite dark.
Okay.
It's kind of sweet as well.
Dari, for my movie, you are quite good when it comes to gender identity. You're quite like, you know.
Yeah.
Can I say, I'm going to show you two words.
Okay.
Can I say either of these words in this year of 2025?
You can say drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
The other one you should rather say intersex person.
Okay.
Yes.
In the context of this film, this person wasn't called an intersex person.
I think you can probably get away with it. It's fine. Do it.
In describing the film, I don't want to offend anybody, but yeah. It's got to be the context of the film.
Yes.
I've fucking bought you some batshit movies.
And in the context of the 80s, you have used words like hooker, prostitute, all that kind of stuff, which we no longer say.
Okay.
So
in
go
context
wild.
Of the 80s.
In the context of the 80s.
Okay, so just as long as I'm clear, I did pass this.
Yes. Now I'm really intrigued from those two words.
I love a movie that is people's first movies. What the fuck were they thinking?
Yeah.
And even more so in later years where they actually go, I do not want this movie on my IMDb.
Yeah.
I regret being involved.
Can it be scrubbed?
This movie was the first movie by starring, his first starring role. He had left General Hospital, John Stamos.
Ooh.
He thought this is going to be his big breakout.
Ooh.
A very young looking John Stamos. Now remember, I mean, General Hospital, he was early 20s, yeah.
Okay.
He reckons this movie, they're going to turn this thing into a franchise. I'm going to be the guy. It also starred, which, I mean, quite appropriately with a member of KISS passing away, Gene Simmons.
All right.
In the
yes.
villain role. And as the love interest, Vanity. She of Prince Ingenue fame.
Nice. Okay.
John Stamos, Gene Simmons, and Prince in a movie called Never Too Young to Die.
Wow, I don't think I've ever
heard of it. Oh, no, Dari, you have not heard of it. So let me give you the word that I've said. So Gene Simmons plays a hermaphrodite supervillain who also is a drag artist. He is an evil hermaphrodite drag artist who goes by the name Velvet von Ragnar. He lives in this dystopian kind of version of LA, and the movie opens with him with all his goons, who look like they're extras from Mad Max, telling them about his plan that he wants to poison the water system of LA, right?
Right.
Not to hold people to hostage, not yeah. for the cure. He's just
he wants
evil.
Everyone to die.
Just fucking wants to do this. This is what he wants to do. And then they figure out that he is going to be foiled. I don't know how or I don't know why, but that the son of a very famous private detective is still around and can stop him.
Okay.
I also forgot to mention that George Lazenby, him of one James Bond appearance, also shows up in this movie as John Stamos's father.
All right. I don't even remember what he looked like, but okay.
The first agent called Lance Stargrove, right?
Okay.
Lance Stargrove, I think, is the father's name as well as John Stamos's name. So it's Lance Stargrove, senior and junior. We then meet John Stamos, who is a gymnast. In college. And we meet him jumping on a trampoline for 5 minutes.
And he wearing short shorts and a bandana?
Tight pants.
Okay.
Vest, tank top.
Right.
It looks like he's wearing Vanity's workout clothes every time he's doing gymnastics, right?
Pants so tight you could see his religion?
Very much. There's definitely a full house going on there. I'm not going to divert that. Lance Stargrove even has his own song. Take a listen to this. Who knows what you'll find? You may like it or not. But all that you find, boy, is all that you got. Stargrove, flying like you've never flown. Stargrove, running to a danger zone. Stargrove. Stargrove. Gene Simmons' character has also now infiltrated the secret agency that Stargrove works for. And he keeps showing up in this very bad beard and wig combo, yearning about all the plans and then foiling the plans. And no one can see that he's in disguise. Hilarious thing about this is it was written by one of the guys who wrote the super campy 1960s Batman.
Okay.
And it is so ridiculously over the top, super campy Batman.
Okay.
And the movie is a series of shenanigans of Lance Stargrove going, I just want to be a gymnast. I don't want to be a spy. Trying to like live up to his father's legacy. He eventually has to get involved because he meets Vanity. Vanity was his dad's like cover or partner or whatever.
Okay.
Love interest. She somehow convinces him, no, you need to take this case. And now starts the shenanigans to stop Gene Simmons from poisoning the water.
Our movies have similar themes.
Yes, very similar. I got to tell you something about Gene Simmons in this movie. The movie is so fucking stupid.
Okay. Like
it has got to be one of my best so bad it's good movies. It is so fucking ridiculous because everybody's super good looking.
Yeah.
I mean, Vanity and John Stamos.
I mean,
no chemistry.
Oh.
No chemistry.
Damn.
Okay, but both beautiful to look at.
Yes.
There's one weird scene where after they have their first like coitus, then they get kidnapped and replaced by lookalikes. I don't know why. I don't know why the lookalikes are put in their bed. It's like, why? Like, who?
So that nobody knows they're kidnapped?
But there's so much of this movie I don't fucking understand. Anyway, it's eventually revealed that Gene Simmons was also the infiltrated, the secret organization. Oh, John Stamos. Years later, they ask him. Oh, so anyway, I've got to tell you, the final fight scene. So Gene Simmons' character, he performs in this crazy biker bar where you order a beer, you get a can of oil. I assume for your motorbike. I don't want to think further.
For your beard?
Gene Simmons is this like really over-the-top Frankenfurter type character. I think that's who he was supposed to be.
Okay.
But does he not fucking throw himself into this role? He goes, this is fucking ridiculous. But hey, I made a career out of fucking looking ridiculous. So let me just say, he fucking steals every scene. He camps it up. He hams it up.
You've made me want to watch it just by saying that.
He is in a completely different movie to what John Stamos is in. John Stamos is going, I'm going to be the next James Bond.
Yeah.
Because this movie, they wanted to make a couple. They said, No, we're going to make a few of them. And John Stamos is like, this is going to be me. This is my future. And he's now being serious. Vanity's just fucked on drugs the whole time, so she doesn't know what the fuck's going on.
Oh, shit.
She's smoking crack.
Okay.
And George Lazenby is just going, well, fuck you guys. You made me one James Bond. I'm going to make sure I shit all over James Bond at every opportunity.
Oh, no.
But Gene Simmons is in a different movie. He's in Rocky Horror. He's in it.
Yeah.
Right? He's helped. He's got an evil scientist henchman played by... by Freddy Krueger.
Really?
Yes. Robert Englund, who plays Freddy Krueger without Freddy Krueger makeup.
Okay. You know?
So he's a scientist. Yeah, he makes another weird appearance. So when Gene Simmons gets asked years later about it, his comment was, yes, the folly of youth. He said, I was offered two roles in Never Too Young to Die. The role of a Marine commander and a hermaphrodite. That'll teach me to read scripts before accepting roles.
But it sounds like he rocked it.
John Stamos. I just thought this is my shot. A young James Bond. I thought it was going to be the biggest breakthrough. I'm done with TV. I'm going to be a movie star. And then I did that piece of shit. He took gymnastic lessons, okay, and worked so hard, he actually broke his ankle. But he says, I threw myself into it. I worked so hard to make it great. He says when they did a meet and greet of the cast before they started shooting, he meets Vanity. He goes, fucking hell, she's gorgeous. They sit next to each other. She put her hand down my pants before the appetizers started coming out. She's completely seduced the shit out of me. I thought, wow, this is going to be a great movie. He says, I don't want to say anything bad about her because I know she straightened out her act. This is speaking before she had passed away. But she was pretty wild. He says she was like fucking Scarface in that movie, like just taking drugs, playing with guns. He says the two never ended up dating because he was so overwhelmed by her. I think she must have scared the shit out of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of Grace Jones.
That's a kind way of saying, I do not want any of that crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do not want any of that. He did get to a point where he thought, I don't want to put up with that anymore, but fuck it. It's vanity. He says he doesn't want to shit on the movie because he says, you know, at the time he was quite embarrassed by it, but he says, I'm at the point in my career where I can look back at the things that were really fucking stupid and go, actually, I'm so glad I could do that. He tried to buy the rights to it to redistribute it because it kind of disappeared for years.
Yeah.
And he thought, you know what? I'm going to buy the rights to this. I'm going to do like midnight screenings, dress-up screenings. Let's turn it into a cult thing. Let's make some positivity out of it. It never kind of happened. But the full movie is on YouTube.
Of course.
Dory, I got it.
As is mine, by the way.
You know, watch them both.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, you go into this movie going, what a fucking weird oddity. Gene Simmons. He is fucking great. He is so good in this ridiculous. In the final fight scene, now, he makes a comment, goes, to be a man as good as me, you've got to be a woman.
Right.
That's what he quotes. In their final fight scene, he's strangling the John Stamos character. John Stamos bites his tit.
Okay. You've sold it. You've sold it to me. I'm watching it.
And he's got, it's not even, it's his boob. He's got a boob. It's like he has boobs. So, yeah. And that's how John Stamos gets him off him. So anyway,
would you like to rephrase it? Not at all.
Never too young to die. And Dory's movie, which I like the Swedish name.
Mio Min Mio.
I like that. Mio Min Mio.
Sounds like meow.
Yeah, sounds like something Gene Simmons would do while he's lubing himself up. Want to end off with 280s Truths and a Lie MTV edition. I'm going to give you some factoids about MTV.
Yes.
In the very early days, and you're going to identify which of them is a lie. The first instance of rap being played on MTV was the song Rapture by Blondie. Number two factoid, Oreo Speedwagon. Now, when we think of MTV, we think Michael Jackson, Madonna, Prince.
Yeah.
We don't think Oreo Speedwagon. However, on the first day, they were played 14 times. I can't imagine.
1980, right?
Say again.
1981. Okay.
I can't imagine many people had music videos. So they must be quite short. Oreo Speedwagon, 14 times on day one. And
I
then,
mean, he had fantastic hair.
Right, two of these are true. One is a lie. Notoriously, the Buggles. Video Killed the Radio Star was the first music video played.
Yeah.
Knowing this, they actually decided they wanted to change their name to the Goggles because they said the Buggles is a nonsensical name. But a tape with the wrong label arrived at MTV, got played, and they forever were known as the Buggles.
Right.
To this day, they hate the name.
Okay.
So, two are true, one is a lie.
Sure.
The first instance of rap being Rapture by Blondie, Oreo Speedwagon being played 14 times on the first day of MTV, and the Buggles wanted to change their name to the Goggles, but due to an errant cokie, kept their original name.
I feel like the Oreo Speedwagon's true.
The Oreo Speedwagon, Dory, you're correct, is true.
I'm kind of torn between the other two.
Blondie being the first instance of rap.
Okay, I'm going to say that's true.
That is also true, Dory. The Goggles, Buggles is complete bullshit. Oreo Speedwagon played 14 times on day one. The MTV was actually promoting an Oreo Speedwagon concert. That was going to be the first event they did.
Okay.
And then that's why I said the first instance of rap played, not the first rap song or the first rapper.
Yes.
So in the song Rapture, they do have this little rap portion, I love. I'm going to give you some of the lyrics. Later in the day, they played other what you'd call traditional rap as rap artists.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time a rap song. The lyrics are, and out comes a man from Mars and you try to run, but he's got a gun and he shoots you dead and he eats your head. And then you're in the man from Mars and you go out at night eating cars. You eat Cadillacs, Lincolns too, Mercuries and Subaru. And don't you stop. You keep on eating cars.
Drugs were so good in those days.
Every time I hear that, I go, that was the high point of rap music. I don't think there have been better bars dropped.
Those are better lyrics than a lot of other rap lyrics.
That's what I'm saying. Better than Kanye. This has been That 80 Show. Everything we spoke about on the show can be found at 80 Show SA on Facebook. Gene Simmons as an intersex person. Doing a Frankenfurter impression. And Christian Bale
giving a wooden acting performance.
So pretty much like he did in Batman.
Yep.
Thanks for joining me, Dory. Goodbye.
Bye.